And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Lights out and away we ayo! Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Trey Kirby, and we've got our local F1 expert, a man who thinks these Mission Impossible missions just might be possible, Graydon Gordian.
If you've completed 8, 9 missions, at what point do you have to acknowledge that they're not that difficult?
Or at least throw on like a parenthetical,
like a
possible for one guy.
A mission plausible, like a mission like something.
Mission
like,
unlikely.
Yeah.
We've also got our team principal, JD, here making the magic happen in the paddock. What's up, JD?
Hello.
You a Mission Impossible fan?
Oh, Trey, you know.
They're good, man.
I love
them. They're so good.
I love them.
A buddy of mine was recently commenting that Mission Impossible, one of the few series that goes super long, where arguably the movies do consistently get better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
The early ones are not as good as the more recent ones,
well,
in my opinion.
The original is
pretty
good. I'd
like to see you hanging from the ceiling trying not to touch the
floor. I'm not hating. I just feel like they've stayed very strong.
Agree.
It's a great point. And that's why we're going to be recapping every Mission Impossible movie ever made.
In
this
the next
summer.
Hour.
That's actually not a bad
That's
idea.
That's a pretty good idea.
Put a pin in that one. Especially if you're here joining us live in the Slipstream team. You're getting some actual brainstorming footage here from the Classic Factory on YouTube. Or if you're listening to the podcast later, thank you very much. Basically, any way you consume it, we like that you're consuming it. We're here anyways to recap the Spanish Grand Prix. But before we get to the grace, Graydon, is there anything that stuck out to you from practice, from qualifying, from the first 2 days of the weekend?
Whew. I mean, qualifying was actually pretty good.
No doubt.
I thought it was exciting. The lap that Leclerc put in to take pole was a spanking lap. That was one of
That's a good thing, right?
That's a good thing.
Yep.
I think so. One of the better qualifying laps of the season so far, you know, absolutely, you know, a good third of a second clear of Verstappen, who didn't get his a chance to do a final hot lap, but I honestly don't think would have had the pace to overtake him. It was great. I mean, honestly, it was it showed a lot of promise. I also think it was a really interesting moment for Charles in his title fight, which there's a Ferrari race engineer, Jacques Clear, likes to talk about how mentally tough Charles Leclerc is. He thinks that's his greatest attribute. And he had a bad opening start to Q3. He spun out. He only had one hot lap to go at it, but he hooked it up for that lap. I thought that was a great evidence of that point that his racing coach likes to always make.
Yeah, so that was really awesome. I think Leclerc shaved a second 1.1 seconds off of his previous lap. And like they were calling it, they're like, this is one of the best qualifying laps we've seen the entire season. So for him to show up in Q3, that was really cool. I think Verstappen was having some problems losing power, so he didn't maybe get his
Verstappen
perfect
didn't get a good
run
shot at it.
But still, Leclerc was like miles ahead, it felt like, after that quali lap. I thought that was interesting. I thought also interesting both Aston Martins went out after Q1 after copying some upgrades.
Yeah,
not a great
weekend. A lot of hype coming in on the package they were gonna have. You know, the green Red Bull didn't live up to the hype, at least not on quali. Yeah,
I did like seeing both Haas making it to Q3, Mick Schumacher in Q3 for the first time. George Russell ended up qualifying in fourth. Really cool as well. So yeah, I thought this was a quality qualifier.
Yeah, there was tons of really interesting stuff. I think the George Russell thing was great. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about it, you know, when we get to the race, but I think we've seen a lot of, we've rarely this season seen Mercedes put it together over the course of both Saturday and Sunday. You know, that so it was nice to see them have a really strong quali, and as I think most people know, managed to make good on that come race day.
Yeah, I think the last time we were talking, George had like a great qualifying on Saturday, or maybe even a great practice, a great qualifying, and then he was still like, I don't know what's happening. For whatever reason, the car is easy to drive. This time he was like, the car feels better. And you could tell on Sunday when
for
the car
sure.
actually did feel better.
And they definitely solved their biggest issues. When you actually looked at the sector times, you know, they were lighting it up in sector one, which was had the big long straightaway, is most advantageous for an engine with real power and for a car that's designed to have speed on the straights. They had terrific performance in those areas that ended up having a big impact on his race come Sunday as well. But that was, I think that was an area where they had struggled a ton because they were really struggling with figuring out porpoising and how they yes. would make that work with, you know, drag and things like that, right? So, and the downforce they were trying to generate. So clearly they've made huge strides in terms of the car.
Yeah, great for Mercedes, but bad for us if we're going to have to retire the word porpoising. It's been fun while
it's
it lasted.
It's a shame, yeah. Mm,
too bad. But we are here to recap the race, so let's talk about what happened on Sunday. We'll start by looking at the top 10 finishers. Max Verstappen finishes on top of the podium, P1 there. As they mentioned a few times on the broadcast, every time he's finished a race this season, he's finished in first. Ended up being a Red Bull 1-2 as Sergio Perez took home P2, and George Russell there in P3 for the Mercedes. Rest of the points finishers go like this: Sainz, Hamilton, Bottas, Ocon, Norris, Alonso, and Tsunoda. Yuki taking home the final point there, finishing 10th for the AlphaTauri. Graydon, what's your big takeaway from the Spanish Grand Prix?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of takeaways, I feel like, from Sunday. They're up and down the
really
grid.
Fun.
I feel like there are a ton of talking points. So I'll start with my boys in red, Ferrari. I actually think, a little bit counterintuitively, I think this is a really positive weekend for Ferrari.
What?
It's a catastrophe in terms of the race itself, but what they inarguably showed is they may have lost their place in the championship lead, but they are absolutely in the fight. The upgrades they brought to Spain worked. Leclerc's pace was real. Even more importantly than his pace, they seemed to manage to do the car setup. It was significantly better management of tire degradation. His first stint on the softs, he was able to go super long, longer than anybody else in the race, and way deep into that stint was still setting fastest laps. That is a huge improvement. That was easily their weakest area, right? Tire degradation is arguably why they've lost some of the races
okay.
they've lost. So I think for them to have proved that there. Now, of course, engine reliability is paramount, right? So they're going to have to solve that. You saw multiple cars with a Ferrari engine have to retire, so that's not ideal, far from it. But I think they should feel really positive that they can continue to compete for the championship, because for the last few races, it looked as if inevitably RB would overtake them and that this was just a matter of time before we were crowning Max. I actually don't feel as if that's the case any longer, despite the fact that the race itself was a heartbreaker for Leclerc.
Well, maybe I'm just a hater, Graydon, because my takeaway was going to be that Red Bull are now the favorites, because it seemed to me like Ferrari wasted everything they did during the first quarter of this season. You know, they obviously had a 1-2 in the opener there in Bahrain. They've had the lead in the Constructors and the Drivers' Championship with Leclerc up until this weekend. They obviously did have a fast car, because Leclerc was leading. I think it was lap 27 when he finally had to retire, but he was quite a ways ahead. Sainz had his spin with the gust of wind there,
yeah.
dropped him down to P11, but was able to recover to P4. A nice drive for him, so they had a fast car. But they also took home only a P4's worth of points here. And it's like, Red Bull is starting to figure things out. They're finishing all the time.
From a Constructors' Championship standpoint, Ferrari absolutely has to be kicking themselves. You know, Carlos in particular has left so many points on the board this mm-hmm. season. It's just, it's at some point, he's got to be demoralized and the team has got to be frustrated with, you know, what their championship lead could look like if he just kept it on the track
sure.
and drove clean races and brought home third places, fourth places, whatever. They would be confidently in lead of the Constructors' title. For Charles, it's his first DNF of the season. I think it's still razor thin with Max. I think that fight will continue on for the rest of the year. I think both are clearly, my only argument would be is look at how fast we saw it swing one way and then swing back the other way.
I think
it's a very, very long season. I think the takeaway for me is we were too quick to say Ferrari's got it all figured out to start the season, and we'd be too quick to say the same of Red Bull right now with, you know, tons of races still left.
All right. One question I did have for you. Do you think that Verstappen would have been able to catch Leclerc if Leclerc doesn't have to retire? The Red Bull also looked incredibly fast.
I don't think so. Okay, so two things. First of all, not given the reality of what Max ran into during the race, which was his DRS wing wouldn't open. He got stuck behind Russell. He had to battle for so much. But also, no, I say, because at that point, by the time Leclerc pitted and then returned into the race in first, he basically is an entire pit stop ahead of Max. Mm-hmm. So no matter what Max does strategically, he can cover off on him. He can run long if that's seeming right, but also seemingly the best strategy was a three-stop strategy, and they had all the window in the world to solve that, figure it out. At the end of the day, I think Leclerc drives a clean race. There's no way you can really make up that deficit given the pace that the Ferrari had. Well, I mean, would he have steadily caught him? Yeah. I mean, steadily closed the gap? Yeah. But actually overtaken him? I think that it was Leclerc was – it was a gift – Max spinning out in, you know, earlier.
Yep.
That basically ended it as long as Leclerc drove a clean race, which, you know, they were unable to do.
Yeah, and the two strategies thing I think would have been interesting, because we kind of saw Russell run into that late in this race when he was leading and he had both Red Bulls chasing him. It's like we've got Verstappen, who has stopped more recently. Perez is trying for the longer strategy, though eventually he went to a three-stopper as well. So they had both options on the table, at least, and I guess maybe Ferrari could have as well, or Red Bull could have taken Leclerc. Who knows?
It would have been more complicating for Leclerc if when he was pitting, he was coming out behind someone.
Okay.
Like, then Checo's in front, and Checo can hold him up and let Max close the gap, a bit like with, you know, Abu Dhabi last year with Hamilton and him helping, you know, Max close the gap there or something like that. But the fact that Leclerc had built up such a gap that he was able to pit from first, return onto the track in first, and then was just eating up seconds on that second stint. I mean, he was clearly going to build up another big lead, you know, and then on fresher tires and not have to pit again. I think that it was going to be really hard without a safety car or something else that, you know, would close the gap artificially.
Yeah, so the heat was the only real complicating factor that we saw. Not a lot of safety cars or any. I mean, we had a couple of yellow flags for sectors for something, but pretty clean altogether. There was still some drama, though, for the
for
P1
sure.
and P2 between Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez. A great result for Verstappen, great result for Red Bull. But Sergio can't
Checo.
Be feeling too great, having been told a couple of times to give up his spot to Max, which not totally unexpected, considering one of them has been there for a while. One of them's the defending champion, the current leader for the championship. What did you make of all the team orders drama for Red Bull?
I think the place where Checo has a real gripe is when he first catches up to Max and he's not able to pass Russell. Checo's on fresher tires. His DRS is working. He clearly would be able, if Max just lets him by, to nick Russell in probably a lap, at most two. He's well positioned to do so. They should have let him through it, and the fact that they didn't was different than saying, hey, we're being strategic here. That was bordering on sandbagging one of the drivers in favor of the other. You know, you were not favoring one, you were actively disadvantaging the other, I think, and that is got to be frustrating for him. At some point, listen, he's not stupid. He understands he's the number two driver. He understands they're positioning Max to win titles, but you've also he's a really competitive guy. You've got to give him a shot to win races. The only races that they can't be giving a chance to win can't just be the ones where Max is getting a DNF or something, right? It's like he's got to have a real shot here from time to time, and this would have been a fair one. I don't know. It's
you think he had a chance at the end? Do you think you don't think that Verstappen was going to catch him on that last stint anyways? Much fresher tires. I mean, eventually they did.
They definitely ended up. Max lucked his way into the best strategy, which is the spin out and then getting stuck behind them, choosing to pit early.
Clutch spin.
Proved to be, like, not smart in the sense that spinning isn't smart, but, yeah, but like, them, that forcing them into an early pit stop was clearly then the right strategy,
sure,
right? Like, that was much smarter to have pitted earlier and to just work those in earlier. And Checo did end up pitting three times, but it was kind of too little too late.
A little bit of a bone throw there at the end, I thought.
Yeah,
go get
yeah.
the fastest lap for us.
Totally, totally. I think that's right. So I think that, you know, had it all been, at one point, it to me, it looked like, oh, Checo's got overwhelmingly the best strategy. It looked like if he could just let him by, Checo might cruise to P1. But I don't know. It's definitely something where I think you've got to be careful if you're Red Bull, because Checo is the teammate of the year, teammate of the millennium, for like some of the stuff he's been doing for Max,
no
and
doubt,
how
yeah.
willingly he's been. And you have to be careful. You can only push that so far, I think, before a guy gets bitter, before you start to sow discord inside the paddock. I don't think – you have to be careful taking advantage of his willingness to be a team player.
It seems to me that Red Bull plays the most favorites between their number one and number two driver from any other team on the grid. It's been like, Ricciardo, get out of here. Gasly, get out of here. Albon, get out of here. Checo, you've been the man, but also you're the number two man. Guaranteed.
100%. I mean – Maybe people would look back to Bottas and Hamilton and say Bottas was the clear number two. But to be honest, earlier in those seasons, they would let him race. Bottas started out seasons well. Bottas has definitely won a lot of races over the years there. There were times where he asked, you know, they had a few controversial moments where they asked him to, you know, give up a lead for Hamilton, you know, late in the season to get those championship points or whatever. But I do agree that this is probably the most imbalanced driver relationship on the grid, probably.
Yeah, hopefully we get to see him actually duke it out at some point. I do like this takeaway from Ignatius here in the Slipstream team. Biggest takeaway, turns out we can have a good race in Catalunya. This was awesome. This was a really enjoyable race.
We were talking about that last week, that I think that what was interesting about this is this was the biggest test of the season for the new cars. And could they follow more closely? Could they make this entertaining? And I think the answer is, yeah, mostly. You know, it's like it's not like the most exciting race of the year. A lot of the kind of the excitement came from like weird, just kind of bad vibes, chaos. But mm-hmm. but there were overtakes in places you don't normally see it. You know, it enabled aggressive, clean defensive driving in parts of the track where oftentimes you just kind of had to give up and, you know, follow because you weren't able to fight back as closely. So I think at the end of the day there, yeah, it's great. Hopefully Barcelona will be a better race going forward because of the new setups.
Yeah, really a fun one this Sunday. So let us know in the comments what your big takeaway was from the weekend. Got something?
Oh, no.
Oh, all right. Let's move on then. What was the best moment from the Spanish Grand Prix?
For me, it's got to be Russell fighting back against when he gets overtaken. There, in general, the Russell defense, you know, kind of like when they're before Leclerc retires, and it looks like it's the battle for second at that time. His defense is incredible, but there is an instance right where Max passes him, mm-hmm. and then he manages to overtake him in those first few turns again. That was, I thought, really brilliant racing by Russell. Showed his class as a driver and the sort of hard, clean racing that you want to see. So that for me was, you know, a standout moment.
Yeah,
sure.
That is easily the moment of the race. Russell battling the Red Bulls because it lasted for like 20 laps.
Oh,
that was incredible.
Insane.
It started about lap 10, you know, where they kind of started getting in range of each other. I think Perez is in first at that time. I guess Russell would be in P2, followed by Perez, followed by Verstappen. That's the first time that Verstappen gets let through.
Yeah.
He can't get it done. Eventually, Russell and Verstappen pit, and then they come back right out, and they're back into it again. Perez finally pits lap 24. Verstappen overtakes Russell through turn one. Russell comes right back through turn two. They're wheel to wheel in turn three, and Russell comes out ahead after turn four. Lap 28 is when Leclerc retires. So George Russell gets the lead, the Grand Prix, for quite a few laps. finally in lap 29, Verstappen pits to overtake. So it's Russell going up against the two Red Bulls like we talked about on different strategies there. Lap 31, Perez finally gets past Russell. Lap 36, Russell pits, Perez P1, Max P2, and then we saw how that played out at the end. That was awesome to see. What did you make of people saying that Russell was being a little reckless, a little weavy out there?
Okay, the weavy on the straights, I thought there was a point. He definitely was right on the edge of a double move, a 1.5 move.
A 1.5-er?
He's definitely very close to an illegal move, especially because that, you know, it seems like he would make a defensive move and then make a big second move for how he wanted to enter the corner, but that he was maybe kind of playing off as his corner entrance is not a defensive move. But in actuality, I'm speculating as to how he was kind of justifying it in his head, but it's definitely was, you know, I think it was fine.
He found a good spot is what you're saying.
I think that he made the car wide. I think it was fine. I definitely don't think that the Red Bulls, at least Max without DRS, didn't have the pure pace to overtake him anyways. So I don't think it was that dangerous in the sense that he was throwing his car, you know, into the path of a car that's moving 20 kilometers an hour faster or something like that. You know, listen to me.
He wasn't Lance Stroll out there is what you're saying.
No, it was on the edge, but I thought it was fun to let him race. I thought it was good racing.
I'm calling it a 1.5 move because it's kind of like, to me, the way that NBA players have figured out how to exploit the traveling rule where it's like, you can take as many steps as you want while you're gathering. You know, you can put your car wherever you want as long as you're doing your turn.
Yeah, I'm making a move as to where I want to be on the straight, and now I'm making my defensive move, and now I'm making a move to be where I want to be to enter the corner or whatever. So it's like you're just I don't know. So he looks good though.
Russell looks good. This was a great weekend, I thought, for Mercedes. Obviously, you had Hamilton and Magnussen touching there on lap one, which kind of put Lewis out of the potential to finish on the podium at least. But I thought he had an awesome race. I thought the other possible like best moment of the race was about lap 58. Bottas is in P4, followed by Sainz, followed by Hamilton. It kind of looked like we were going to be lining up for another three-way sort of we're passing each other sort of battle there. Sainz and Hamilton go into P4 and P5. Hamilton passes into P4. He was 19th after the spin. That was awesome. But then lap 65, Sainz passes back into P4 because the Mercedes was overheating. They were giving him the lift and coast like Tass Mellis driving home from Memphis in the middle of the night. He said, it's 9 miles to Bucky's, and we've got 11 miles in the tank. Lifting and coasting down the hills, but it ended up working out.
My one other moment of the race, they're parallel moments to the Russell-Max battle, but is Max being so angry on the radio about his DRS.
He was so mad.
He was so mad. I was really loving it, how upset he was.
You can't even make the DRS work?
He was furious.
Crazy, though. Like, all of the different, like, techniques.
And hit the button 50 times.
Like, no, just once. Just once.
That was incredible. I think it was
Kravitz that said, he's like, sounds like what they need is somebody to just hit the DRS thing on the back, and that should fix it. That's what it felt like when, like, they're just completely winging it. I thought that was a funny moment. I thought Lewis Hamilton basically wanting to quit.
Oh my God, it's
very weird.
As I've
Might
ever
as well
heard
save
him.
The engine. Might as
I,
well.
I couldn't even believe how demoralized he sounded in that moment.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I was kind of like, okay, maybe.
I was like, people are right. I guess he's
maybe
checked out
people
of this
are right.
Season.
I was like, maybe he's like, I can't do this anymore. I don't feel like doing this anymore. Now, lo and behold, he ends up having P6. A terrific race. Yeah, he ends up
not
having
bad. Or P5, I guess.
He has his best race of the season, as it turns out. But
that was funny. Also, it must have been about lap 20, I think, is when Perez pulls up behind Russell, and you hear over the radio, Sergio's on a one stopper.
Blimey!
Dropped a blimey on him.
Oh my gosh!
That was cool.
The most British thing I've ever heard in my life.
That was cool.
Just yell blimey. Also, I guess they were a little off base on that one. But Checo definitely not. A one stopper would have been impossible.
Yeah.
Truly
would have been impossible.
Would have been impossible.
Yeah, because it was incredibly hot there, which that was another one of my favorite moments was during the national anthem, seeing all of the drivers sharing umbrellas.
Oh,
they were
my gosh.
So hot. But they were also like sharing umbrellas. Not just teammates either. It wasn't just like Lewis and George standing next to each other. It was like they had, I don't know, 12 umbrellas for the 20 drivers, so you'll see Latifi hanging out with Ocon or Verstappen and Leclerc together. I thought that was very funny to see them just, hey, you need some shade? Hop under here. Moving on, what's your most surprising or most disappointing from the Spanish Grand Prix?
Okay. Most surprising in a positive way, Alonso in the points.
Huge.
Definitely shocked me. I just didn't think... Even if he drove a great race, and I do think that, you know, he clearly starting last wasn't, you know, an accurate reflection of the car. I just thought, oh, even if you drive a great race, I don't know if overtaking is, you know, strategically there's enough variance to allow you to eke your way up that much. I thought that was a huge thing. And then also surprising is probably... Is Hamilton getting back all the way back to P6, battling for a top four finish and, you know, ending up where he does, but he's right there. That was, I think, really, really surprising. Sorry, P5. I think I said P6, but P5.
Yeah, so did I, but it definitely was P5. Either way, it wasn't P8, which was their goal for him. Remember? Because he gets on, they're like, we got to save this engine. They're like, we're thinking you can get P8.
Oh, totally. So he when in fact, if they don't have the heating issue, you know, he cruises to fourth,
yep.
Right? Carlos got a gift to get back up into fourth there. So that was surprising big time in a positive way. And
yep.
You know what? I'm just going to say we've already mentioned this, but overall surprising. It was a great race.
It was a great race.
I mean, this is far and away, I think, short of maybe Abu Dhabi before the changes they made last year to the track layout. Abu Dhabi and Barcelona and maybe Monaco a little bit too are the ones that get the most hate from fans
okay.
for being boring. Like, nothing happens here. This is lame. And they were talking about that going into the race. It's like 90% of the time the person who's in – you know, starts in P1, wins the race, and they just run away with it. Whatever it's, there's not that much strategic variance. You just kind of drive, and it ends up being a big, long parade. And that has overwhelmingly been true. So that's surprising in the best of ways.
Yeah, sometimes the leader's engine just completely gives up.
Sometimes. What about you? What surprised you?
Well, I think Alpine's definitely got to be in the mix for pleasant surprise. Like you mentioned, Alonso finishes P9, had to start last after a power unit upgrade. Ocon, though, finished P7. I thought that
Great.
Was awesome because after qualifying, I was not very encouraged for Alpine. Alonso went out after Q1. He just missed his last lap, basically, so he didn't have a chance to improve. Ocon went out as well, and I thought it was such a weird message over the radios. We left lap time out there. You know why. I was like, who's he speaking to specifically? Who did something weird?
You know.
I think they've looked fast for the most part this season, just super unreliable. This time, they actually got it done. Finished the race with both cars, both in the points. That's why Alonso said it felt like a win. It should have.
What about disappointments, though? Who out there disappointed?
Okay, I'm disappointed Mick didn't get points.
Yeah, that's
He was
yeah.
looking like he had it. Some strategy things worked out his way. I think he got to P9 with just like a handful of laps left, but ended up kind of torpedoing down the standings. I think he finished P14, which was probably not where he deserved to finish. Is he ever going to get points?
Yeah, he
will. This season?
Will
it happen this season? No, you don't
so.
Think so.
I think so. No, I think
tough.
They can do it. I think they can do it. You know where he has a good shot in Monaco, where I think that if he can just finish, if he can start in the top 10 again, and I think they seem well positioned to do so, he could potentially finish close to where he starts because of how difficult overtaking is. I do think that Haas is showing a little bit more resiliency as a car. I kind of thought Haas would like trickle down the standings
uh-huh.
throughout the season. I think they're holding serve better than I thought they would, but it's definitely not a sure thing.
And they could have even look better if they don't have that first lap contact.
For sure.
With
for sure.
Hamilton and Magnussen as well. I would also say pleasant surprise, Bottas was awesome. Qualified P7, finished P6. He lost out on tire strategy late as well. And another pleasant surprise, Nicholas Latifi beat Alexander Albon for the first time this season.
He needed that one bad.
Yeah, were you keeping tabs on that late in the race?
I was, 17, you know what? 17 through 20? I was not, but I did. I'm happy for Latifi because I will say that the... people are starting to come after him a little bit. Why does this guy have a seat? There's a lot of other drivers out there who deserve this seat.
They even mentioned it on the broadcast. I think Brundle brought up Nick DeVries. Is that perhaps who could step
he was doing laps in practice for them. You know, Nick DeVries, who is a huge talent and somebody who absolutely could potentially be in a Formula One seat next year. So definitely something that they'll need to watch out for.
I think Brundle even said they could make the switch during the season, which happens, but I mean, you don't hear that kind of talk on F1 broadcast where they're like, oh, we need to get this guy out of here right away. I feel like you didn't even hear that with Mazepin last year, and they, I mean, a little bit different sort of scenario,
but a pay driver as well. A pay driver, yeah.
So. I would also say disappointment, Daniel Ricciardo, P12, basically didn't see him at all during the race. No. Even Zach Brown has said, he's got to pick it up a little bit here. Norris is clearly outclassing him, and Norris, you know, he was sick all weekend, and he looked sick all weekend. I think they said it was tonsillitis, qualified P11, finished P8. He had a fine race, but Ricciardo, another bad one for this guy.
A little surprised they let, I guess it's probably up to the driver, it's up to the team, a little surprised they didn't let Norris race. It was so hot. There were so many comments about how challenging it was physically, and he was visibly ill.
Oh,
you know, I
can't imagine many sports worse to do than driving 100 miles an hour like this while you're sick.
Oh, I think it would be terrible. I had thought there was a chance that he just wouldn't drive. But instead, you know, he ends up in the points, right?
Not bad, yeah. Also a disappointment, Drake apparently put down $230,000 on Charles Leclerc when he was in the lead. Maybe that's the reason. This was the Drake curse. As soon as he put the money down.
Yeah, that was a bad bet in retrospect.
He was probably thinking, this is easy for me here.
Yeah.
Whoever is on pole is always going to win in Barcelona. That's what they said. That's what they told Drake, but apparently not true.
Apparently not true, and I think his first F1 bet, he said, started. He is starting from the bottom. We'll see where he goes. We'll see where he goes from here.
That's good. I know where we're going from here. We're going to the full beans driver of the weekend, giving our beans to the most impressive on the grid. Graydon, who are you giving your beans to this weekend? And I will say, we heard the term full beans on the broadcast.
We did hear the term
again.
Full beans on the
was
podcast.
Big time. That was,
yeah, Brundle threw it out there. Okay. I'm really conflicted this week. I thought about a few different people. This is an odd one, but I'm going to give it to Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
I'm going to give it to Lewis. I think it was like, this was, for me, I look at the draw after the season he's had, as despondent as he's been, as frustrated as he's been, and as demotivated as he was earlier in the race, dropping all the way back to last, way, way behind, to come back and finish fifth, to be basically right there, almost finishing fourth, but you know, finish fifth. That is an incredible recovery, a great drive in a place where I really don't think that many expected him to be able to do anything like it. Super impressed, deserves tons of credit, and hopefully for him is like the spark that he needed to like feel some renewed momentum and some renewed capability for this season. So I'm going to give it to Lewis.
I certainly hope so. We got some more Mercedes to talk about after the break. So I'm with you on that. Hamilton was definitely in my bean consideration. Okay. But since you're giving him your beans, I'll give Carlos Sainz my beans. Similar beans, honestly, to Lewis Hamilton. An early spin, he didn't get quite as much leeway as Max Verstappen did. Here's a key. If you spin out because of wind, say it right away.
Oh, it's the wind.
When Sainz went out, they're like, ooh, another tough one for Carlos Sainz. But when Verstappen went out, he immediately said, huge gust of wind. And they're like, oh, must have been a gust of winds for Carlos Sainz.
This is definitely like you see the like the way that, you know, Brundle and Crofty and their, you know, impressions coming in, like, shape it. It's like Carlos spins. It's like, oh, Carlos, another mistake from Carlos. Max spins. It's like, why would Max spin? What negative externality affected him?
He certainly wouldn't have made a mistake.
Like,
Sainz dropped to a P11, I think, was the lowest he got after his spin there at turn four, but finished P4. The only Ferrari to finish, obviously, so not bad for his home race. And Norris, I think, gets in consideration as well, battling through an illness. But let us know, drop your beans in the Slipstream team, and let us know who your full beans driver of the weekend is. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we get back, we're going to be a No Dunks podcast. What?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Welcome back to No Breaks. I mentioned we're going to be turning into a No Dunks podcast. On the No Dunks podcast, when we have a lot of topics that don't really link with each other, we do the up-down report.
Okay.
But here on No Breaks, it's the shift-up, shift-down report.
Prepare your tumbis. It's the up-down report.
Same intro, though.
I gotta work on a new intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people know that we're shifty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They know. They know.
Yeah.
Throw anything car related into any other terminology here. Hit me with a horsepower.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
like horses, but I love horsepower. Nice. All right. Our first up down report topic today, Graydon. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. There was a lot of buzz about the new Mercedes over the weekend. They finished P3 and P5. Looked racy the entire weekend. In fact, both Christian Horner and Mattia Bonato both said they're a little wary of Merck's newfound pace heading to Monaco. So, Graydon, are you up or down on Mercedes possibly, maybe, getting in the mix for the Constructors' title?
I'm actually down on that. I'm shifting down on them getting into the mix on the Constructors' title. Will they, inarguably, I think they are well positioned to take home third.
Yes.
But I actually think they, I don't think anybody else looks like they have the pace that the Merc has from the rest of the field. However, I also think if you really look at it, you really look at the pace that the, that Leclerc had and that both Red Bulls have, they don't really compete, at least with the Red Bulls. I will say that there is a world where Ferrari just kind of fades from here. I don't believe that's what's going to happen, but it is plausible that Ferrari doesn't improve meaningfully over the rest of the season, if Carlos continues to underperform and it's really just Charles is the only one seriously fighting for podiums week in, week out, and both Russell and Hamilton, who are arguably the best driver duo on the grid right now, nail it, they could slip up into second. I don't think they take the Constructors' Championship, but I think you've got to be nervous that that either of the Red Bull or Ferrari underperforming from here put themselves under threat from Merck.
And Merck was much stronger in the second half of the season last year, obviously. Verstappen has a huge lead on Hamilton and then came back storming in the second half of the season. But right now, Mercedes, 75 points down on Red Bull, 49 on Ferrari. So you're right. Kind of feels like they're locked into third. Maybe they could challenge for P2 in the Constructors. But I will say after this weekend, it does feel like winning a race is a possibility again.
Very on the table. Very on the table. I think you'd probably need a couple of things to go right. You know, Max's DRS just opens naturally. He slips right past him and, you know, he wins by quite a large margin or something like that, right? You know, and I think Russell probably still ends up third on the podium, but I think we're thinking very differently about how their pace relates to the other people up top. So I think that in actuality, they're not there, but yeah, they could definitely win a race, especially a race that I think is, they showed tremendous speed in the first sector. They seem to have tremendous straight line speed they found again. So when they get to fast open tracks, Monza, Spa, Silverstone, really high speed tracks, I think they have a shot at winning.
They have a shot. And I think that's pretty much what Toto said as well. He's like, if we don't have the contact with Magnussen on lap one, Lewis could have won that race. And I mean, he was fastest in a lot of sectors a lot of times, but like you're saying,
Lewis was when he came out, I think during his second or third stint, he was ripping blazing. It. He was blazing out there.
I think he likes starting from the back or like having to do these recovery drives because, like, where was it last year where he started 20th? Was that Silverstone where he had to.
So Silverstone, he had a thing where he makes contact with Max, sends Max out of the race. Then they end up having a long penalty, right? So he starts way back, I think, at the back. Mm-hmm. Similarly in Brazil, he starts
way
back.
That's right, Brazil
is the one. There's a bunch where he's had to claw his way back from very deep.
All right, so not likely that they are really challenging for Constructors' Championship, but we both agree a win is possibly in the cards for Mercedes.
100%, 100%.
Who do you think is more likely to get the win, Russell or Hamilton? Russell has finished top five in every race. He's the only driver to finish top five in every race so far. But Hamilton's Hamilton.
Wow, it's a tough question. I feel like I'm going to go with Russell. I'm going to give Russell the benefit of the doubt because to me,
I didn't expect that.
When you are the third best car on the grid, the way you win races is you are always there at the door, ready to walk through it when it opens. Consistency is the biggest key to putting it on the podium to winning races when you actually don't have the pure pace in your vehicle. And Russell is the guy showing that. Russell's the guy who is always sitting there waiting to take advantage of somebody else's mistake week in, week out. That's how you win races when you don't really have the pace. And they arguably now do really have the pace, but you know, but even if they don't totally close the gap, that's what puts them in a position to be on the top step.
All right, we shall see. We shall see. Our next one, we saw some new upgrades in Barcelona. Obviously, the latest Aston Martin Graydon caught the eye of Red Bull team principal Christian Horner, who said, quote, "Imitation is the biggest form of flattery." He wrote that, actually, because the Aston looks like the Red Bull. However, the car was cleared by the FIA, and Aston technical director Andrew Green even said, "It came as a surprise that Red Bull came out with a similar concept as well." I love that. Turning the tables. Actually,
who came up with this.
I can't believe they did the same thing we did.
Yeah.
We've heard this kind of thing before. I think most recently it was Haas and Ferrari. Haas had been copying Ferrari. Are you up or down on copying other teams' cars? Does it happen? Should it happen?
It definitely does happen. I do not really think it is a problem. First of all, it has just as many risks as it does rewards. Aston Martin, who is kind of the copier in chief as of this point, it seems, you know, copying a wide variety of people over the years, you know, it is very much an up or down mixed results strategy for them. I think the reality is F1's a small community of people. People move around teams. You know, Aston Martin now employs the recently departed Red Bull head of aerodynamics as their technical director. That guy can't forget everything he already knew. Even if he doesn't take proprietary data with him, he already knows certain things. And two, he has a philosophy. He has an approach to how you generate downforce that he implemented at Red Bull that is obviously going to be reflected in his decisions down the line. So it's no surprise that when they started working on it, their concept iterated in the direction of Red Bull. However, I mean, they really do look a lot alike. Did you see the photos next to each other?
They look a lot alike.
I was startled, actually, at how similar they looked. I thought
it is pretty funny that it's Aston Martin doing it again, considering they had the pink Mercedes a few years back.
Yeah, this is not a winner's mentality here. I just feel like you are never going to be the best car on the grid if what you're doing is like constantly just kind of mimicking what more successful cars are doing. You're not putting yourself in a position to really compete for race wins and titles, at least consistently. So I don't know. It's a little bit lame, but also I get it. These guys are scrapping, trying to stay competitive any way they can.
You hear a lot about the NFL being a copycat league. Is F1 a copycat league? Because to me, I'm like, why would you not copy the fastest car? To me, you know, we came in this year, new regulations, quite a few different looking side pods. I would say that there's kind of two general schools of thought. Like there is the Red Bull Ferrari. We have a big wide side pod, and then you have the Mercedes kind of like smashed in on the sides. That one doesn't work. So I would go look at the wide ones. Next year, everybody's going to have wide ones.
Yeah, I think it's super fun that we saw a bunch of variants and designs coming into the season, but I do think we will see people kind of slide into a few kind of core approaches here. I don't know. I mean, listen, this motorsports is there's an old saying, which is, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
There we go.
So, you know, for these guys, I feel like they're trying to cut every corner they can, find every nook and cranny in the rule book to slide into and gain an advantage. I like it. I don't mind it.
I did see some pictures of Lewis Hamilton looking at Max Verstappen's car and possibly touching DRS wing.
Well, Maybe that's...
I don't know. The pictures were too blurry to do a Joe Borgia review. I couldn't tell if his actual finger touched it in Parc Fermé. If you think that's a weird one, this one is even more strange to me. Graydon, so I need you to help me figure out what's going on. A bunch of team principals led by Red Bull's Horner have raised concerns that some teams may not be able to compete in every race of this season because they're going to spend too much on their cost cap. The big teams seem to back Horner, but the midfield teams have voted against raising the cost cap this season. So why would a cost cap raise be necessary, and are you up or down on doing it?
So I think a cost cap raise, it would be necessary for a variety of reasons, right? But you know, the biggest reason is that people are mismanaging their budgets and they're spending too much money too quickly. And certainly the fact that the top teams are the ones saying we need to increase the cost cap is not surprising. They are the ones who are probably spending most aggressively trying to maintain their advantage at the top of the field. It's no surprise there. I think the other ones don't want the cost cap to be raised because they're playing by the rules. The cost cap is to benefit the midfield and lower teams, right? So they just can't be, you know, outspent and just beaten by pure dollars, right? So it's...
Yeah, I thought it was funny that Horner was like, this isn't for us big teams. This is for the midfield teams. We want to
give them a little bit of flexibility. Yeah, totally. And then we want... and that's obviously...
I mean,
like,
sure, we can spend
Horner,
more.
That would be Horner's first instance of like a charitable you know, stance on something. I think, you know... So, yeah, I mean, listen, I think they probably shouldn't. I think they could they reconsider it after the season, after they've got more data around like how taxing it is to move and travel, you know, these big macroeconomic things like inflationary, you know, pressure and stuff like that do affect them. You know, I mean, you know, you know, drive time radio crap, like the cost of gas, like affects these teams when you're flying these cars all over the world.
That's literally what they were saying.
You know, so it's a factor to say, listen, it's gotten way more expensive to operate these teams since we set this cost cap. However, I also think that raising it, you know, will advantage those teams that are right at the bleeding edge of their budget because they're going to be battling for a title.
Sure. The teams that are spending a lot of money want to continue to be able to spend that amount of money when they're in the midst of a title race, which might be getting beefed up a little bit here with a third team coming in.
I would say that the goal of the cost cap was financial sustainability for all participants, right? So they do need to don't let the measurement or the vehicle become the goal itself. Make sure that you've put a structure in place that everybody can continue to participate sustainably and be assessing whether the cost cap is the best way to do that. Stay focused on that goal, not on the mechanism you use to achieve that goal. However, you know, I think for right now they shouldn't change it mid-season.
I agree with you. So far we've done constructors' titles, copying, and cost cap. Boring. Ooh. Now for the fun stuff. Graydon,
very boring.
Saw this over the weekend quite a bit on the broadcast. Are you up or down on the new drone cam we saw? This would be following around like a lot of corners.
Yeah.
I feel like it missed the car almost every time.
No,
the drone is not as fast as an F1 car, I don't think.
It is not as fast as an F1 car. And I'm going to say I'm down on this. I think it's a nice idea, but in general, I think the F1 producers should probably just focus on like making sure you're showing the most exciting part of the race at any given moment. This is too cute by half too when cute. Oftentimes there's like something dramatic going on and they're like on a totally different part of the track or something like that, right? Like, so
totally.
Maybe we just get back to fundamentals here and make sure that the camera is actually set on the action at any given moment, and then we'll worry about drones or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm...
No, I'm with you. I think I think when they use like the big overhead, slow, beautiful shot, that looks awesome. Like, that looks like incredibly well produced. This to me just looked kind of amateurish, the way it's like barely able to capture what's going on. I feel like the quality of the the feed from the camera is not as HD as it is when you're looking at the regular cameras they have. I will say though, two cameras I did like. They did the old thing, I think it was Hamilton in the pit stop, where they put on his wheel.
Oh,
and the camera
spins
with the wheel. Very cool. And they also hooked
Verstappen
up with a bottle cam there on the podium. They got it like on his magnum of champagne. Yeah. You see him like drinking. Very cool.
I'm into that. Cool. Yeah, it's fun. Those are fun. I'm down. I think that stuff's fun. I love the twisty cam during the tire.
Twisty cam is awesome. I'm generally up on most of these cams. Like, I like nose cam. I think that's the one that's, like, right down on the nose, kind of showing things out there. Yeah. Helmet cam is being more prevalent this year. They always start out looking bad, and then they improve as they continue using it. So hopefully that's the case as well.
I just think it's a little bit unnecessary because the courses are – they're so set, and the action – not that the action's predictable – and what is a little bit predictable. I just mean, you know, it's not as if they're drone camming over top of a battle. It tends to just be a cool shot of a car sweeping around a corner or something like that, at which point the drone isn't actually that necessary. Like a high position stationary camera probably achieves the same effect.
Sure.
I don't know.
All right, final up-down. It's a poster from weareperry.com. That's P-A-R-I. The poster is titled Bot Ass. And as you can see here when you zoom in, it's Valtteri Bottas, skinny dipping in a beautiful stream.
Beautiful.
Great. Are you up or down on Valtteri's Bottas?
I am so up on this. I could not be more supportive of Bottas' ass. I mean, here, this is, it's a lot.
He's looking good.
He looks good. He looks heavy. He looks refreshed, revived. This is a man born anew. Bathed in the waters of a creek, of a stream, you know, and I think you could probably, the season he's having, could you tie it back to this moment? And
I just have to wonder, like, was this photo taken when he made the decision? Like, he's like, I'm choosing between Williams and Alfa Romeo. Fresh start at Alfa Romeo. I'm going skinny dipping. And ever since then, he's been flying free.
A clear mountain spring, you know, heals all wounds. So I think it's, I mean, this is great. This is great. This is such a weird thing.
This is such a weird thing.
This is such a weird thing to have released, but I do really like it. Did you see what they asked Lewis about it?
They asked him,
they were like, are you going to buy Bonus's poster? And he's like, it's for charity. He's like, what are you talking about? So they explained it to him. I think somebody showed him a photo and he was like, oh, that's great. I'm definitely buying that. He is like, yeah.
Are you going to buy it?
We'll have to see. We'll have to see. I'm not sure. You know what? I don't know. From time to time, I buy things.
We'll have to see. If you want to buy it, I think it's only like $12 at WeAreParry, PARI.com. Go get your own
like
boat ass.
You'd have to be a fool not to buy that.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's a classic, I would say.
It's definitely a classic photo.
Classic photo for a classic factory. One last break for the boys. When we're back, we're talking Monaco. Back with the No Breaks, boys. We just recapped the Spanish Grand Prix, but before we recap the Monaco Grand Prix, let's take a look at the driver and the constructor standings after six races? We've had six races, is that right?
Is that right?
I think so. Up top, for the first time this season in the driver standings, Max Verstappen took the lead over Charles Leclerc there in P2, followed by Perez, Russell, Sainz, Hamilton, Norris, Bottas, Ocon, and Magnussen. In the team standings, Red Bull takes the lead for the first time in the Constructors' Championship, followed there by Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, Alfa Romeo, Alpine, AlphaTauri, Haas, Aston Martin, and Williams. So, got the Monaco GP next weekend, May 27th through May 29th. We got practice, we got quali, and we've got the race on Sunday. They changed practice this year, huh? Isn't it like always supposed to be on a Thursday? They're doing it on Friday this year, something like that.
Oh, is that? There is something. There is something different about it.
But I think we're going to standard Friday, Saturday, Sunday schedule for this weekend, Graydon. Obviously, a historic race. Not always the most exciting race these days. What are you expecting for the 2022 edition?
Okay, so I think this is a really interesting race this year. You're right. Sunday might not be, you know, it's not necessarily the best race on the calendar anymore. Saturdays, it's the most important qualifying of the year.
Okay.
So it's definitely worth tuning in for Saturday. I think this is a make or break weekend for Ferrari.
Okay.
I think their car is really well optimized for this course. All of the sectors in previous races where they're performing well, you know, are the sectors that are probably most representative of Monaco, how curvy it is, how twisty it is, all these things. The car is well designed to perform at a high level in Monaco. They need to perform well. And Charles Leclerc in particular, if he is mentally tough, as I talked about at the top of the show, then he needs to show that and needs to bounce back here. He has never finished a race in his home country of Monaco.
That's crazy, actually.
He has never... It is not that he's not... He has DNF'd every single race, except last year in which he did not start.
That's last year was crazy, too, right?
Last year was crazy.
He had pole position wrapped up. Last turn, he crashed in quali, then wasn't able to start on Sunday. And like you're saying, a lot of times if you're starting on pole, you're getting the dub in Monaco. So hopefully he can just keep it clean, buddy.
He is a monster on Saturdays. He is probably proving to be one of, if not the best qualifiers in the sport. That was true prior to this year, where he was oftentimes qualifying well above the capability of the car. So he needs to put it on pole, and then he needs to bring home the win, because otherwise, I think then my prediction about Ferrari being in the title fight, I think they're starting to look at a hole that is going to be intimidating, and they're going to start to be in a little bit of trouble here in terms of their fight with Red Bull.
Verstappen, Sainz, and Lando Norris finished P3 in Monaco last year. Do you think they'll have real water in the marina or just like a picture of water?
I don't know. I think it's tough to say. Yeah, I think... I don't know. You know, we don't know. I think is it. We didn't know in Miami, and we won't know here until we show up and see for ourselves.
You throwing a party? I know you did last year. We got together. I was so excited. It was like my first gathering with pod people.
I did not have children at this time.
You did not have children at this time.
I might not have a
the
party
game has
this
changed.
Year. The game has changed.
I remember last year the two most exciting things from the Monaco Grand Prix were they couldn't get Bottas's wheel off.
And we that was a wild moment, actually,
most exciting part of the race, where we're like, no, 25 seconds. That was crazy. And then the most exciting for me is that I almost sliced my thumb off cutting a bagel, bled all over your bathroom, cleaned up most of it. Laura went in after me, found the blood I hadn't found. She cleaned up the rest of it.
Okay.
Haven't been able to feel the tip of my thumb for almost a year now.
Really? You're still having lingering effects of the bagel incident?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Here that was a, you got some sharp knives. Oh, that one was serrated too. It hurts so bad.
But it's so good for, it's not just, the serrated knives, it's not just for bagels. Tomatoes, lots of other items in the kitchen there. It's really useful for. I actually just cut my thumb with the serrated knife just like the other day.
Come on, man. That's the exact same thumb?
I literally just did it the other day.
It just slices right through flesh.
It really did
really
hurt.
Really nice.
Quite a bit, actually, and I did bleed on a bunch of stuff.
Very cool. I was like, I'm not leaving. I don't care if I pass out in the bathroom. I'm not leaving a get-together right now. Yeah. I can't do it.
I was cutting some mozzarella, I think. I was trying to make a caprese salad, which would be lovely to enjoy during the Monaco.
It does sound great, actually. Yeah.
It's a nice Monaco Grand Prix snack, I feel.
Yeah, fun times. Just don't cut off your thumb. That's it, though, for no breaks. We're going to be back next Wednesday. It'll be June on next Wednesday, June 1st, because I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to be able to watch this one live. My sister's getting married on Sunday, Graydon.
Oh, I actually might not. Yeah, for those of you who follow my awful, boring F1 tweets, I actually might not be watching it live either. I might have to miss it. But I'll, you know, catch it later that day.
Yeah, yeah. So June 1st, we anticipate the next episode of No Breaks. You can follow Graydon for his absolute trash tweets, at Mr. Gordian.
Very bad.
You think you're going to have any tweets about NBA basketball tonight, Graydon? I've seen a lot of blowouts.
I mean, my tweets are getting, my tweets are as boring as the games now. I just say, this game is boring. And then my tweets are not imaginative or fun or funny in any way.
Yeah, so if you're looking for
I'm disappointed in myself.
Completely mediocre tweets. That's at Mr. Gordy. And if you're looking for solid tweets, at No Dunks Inc. anywhere and everywhere on the internet. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, whatever. Send us some F1 emails at theathletic.com. Subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/NoDunks. No Dunks, the basketball show. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern on the No Dunks channel to break down Game 4 between the Warriors and the Mavericks tonight. You think it's over?
Actually, no, I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep.
I think it's pick a gentleman's sweep?
If it's I don't know.
Inventor of the gentleman's sweep?
I don't always pick a gentleman's sweep, but when it does happen, I do feel special pride.
Yeah, you should, man. That's an awesome thing to have created.
I didn't create the phenomenon, but I did.
You did.
Nickname it.
You did. It didn't exist before the internet.
It didn't exist.
All right, that's No Dunks. Tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern. We're back next Wednesday for No Breaks, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Stay speedy, people. Vroom, vroom.